We're going to do this. We're doing it.
We're doing it.
We're doing it. Thank you for tuning in today for the very first episode of our podcast, Sheer Crime.
Woohoo!
Yeah! Where, you know, the two of us get together and discuss all things true crime. Both of our husbands are sick to death of our fascination and obsession.
Yes, they are.
All crime shows that we can't stop talking about. So instead of being silent, what did we do?
We made this podcast.
We started a podcast.
Because we need to. I mean, let's be real. I watch too many shows by myself and I need someone to talk to them.
Yes. It's not fun to drink alone. It's not fun to watch true crime alone. And damn it, it's 2020. We are women and we can do whatever the fuck we want.
Damn right.
So we're doing a podcast.
So here we are, guys.
Yeah. So loud, in your face, fucking enjoy it. And if you don't, we don't really want to hear about it.
Still rate us, right? So, well, yes. Still rate us, you know.
Rate us high, but you don't have to listen.
That's right. That's right. Subscribe, right?
Right. So, what? It's been 10 years?
10 years.
My God.
10 years. 2010.
10 years ago.
Yes. We met in beauty school.
Yes! Learning how to cut hair.
Color hair. Do perm. Nails.
Oh, perms.
Toes. Ugh, man. Toes. Facials. Ugh.
No. There's so many moments
so gross.
I wish I never had to live through.
Oh, the smell of stinky feet in tub of water. I cannot. No. I just can't.
No, I can't either.
So glad we're actually not doing any of that anymore.
No, neither one of us. Both of us are completely out of the hair industry.
We are out of the hair industry, and that's okay. But we bonded together now, a decade later.
Oh, my gosh.
With our love for true crime.
That's how it works. That's just how it works.
And my name is Mackenzie Millard.
And I'm Amy Sawada.
And we are from a small town here in Midwestern Minnesota.
Yeah. We're just living the dream. And how weird that 10 years later, we end up in the same town.
It's very weird.
We don't even have to travel to do this.
No, it's pretty awesome.
It's literally
very, very exciting. It's very exciting. And today we decided to do the episode of Long Shot, the Netflix documentary. If you haven't seen it yet, holy shit, go turn on your TV right now and watch this documentary. It's absolutely insane.
I had never seen it, and I had never heard of it until you brought it up.
Literally.
It skipped my radar
Holy
somehow.
Shit. That's all I said was, holy shit, I can't even believe that something like this actually happens today in our life. I mean, like, someone can actually live their whole life in prison and be an innocent person. I mean, I knew that, but to, like, see this documentary in real life and actually visualize this absolutely blows my mind.
Yeah. Oh, blows my mind. I used to have so much trust in the justice system until I hear about things like the Innocence Project and all of these people who get locked up for absolutely nothing.
It's
very
terrifying.
Little evidence against them. All coincidental a
terrifying.
Lot of times.
Yeah. I mean, that's the shit that keeps me up at night. It could literally be anyone, wrong place, wrong time.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, you're going to prison the rest of your life if you do not have a great defense attorney to get your ass out of this and go to every extent to find you innocent and make sure that you are time-stamped everywhere you went that day and that time. I mean,
my God.
I don't remember what I did yesterday and or what I had for lunch even. I literally can't remember anything.
I don't even remember what time it is now.
To imagine having to think about what I did 3 months ago? No way.
Seriously?
No way. Especially in quarantine. Come on, let's be real. Every day just blends together at this point.
I was going to say, it's really, all the same. The reality is 3 months ago, we were doing the exact same thing that we did today.
Literally.
So luckily, we have an alibi.
We have an alibi because we know it hasn't changed, you know.
Not yet.
Oh, my goodness. Well, let's start off our podcast today. This show is about Juan Ignacio Catalan. He was born in L.A. in 1978. He grew up in the suburbs, a little bit outside of L.A. He had an older brother, Mario, that he always looked up to, who unfortunately hung around a bad crowd and was always getting into trouble. Juan had actually been the driver while his brother was breaking into cars, and that was the first time he had gotten arrested. Ugh. And he had sworn that it was going to be his last time being arrested. And unfortunately, because of this documentary, we know that's not true.
Yeah. And was he a teenager at that time? I didn't quite catch that.
I think he was like 11 or 12. He was young, like young. I don't even think he was able to, maybe he was able to drive. He must have been able to drive if he was the driver. But young, yes. He was very young. And his brother had been getting into, you know, issues with the law his whole life.
Wasn't he part of a gang or something like that? Or hung around with a group like that?
I believe so. Well, because we'll learn later on in the story that, yeah, he was getting into a bad crowd and he's continued to have trouble and was even in court again. And that's where a lot of this stems from. So we'll dive a little bit more into that later on.
Great. All right. So the story starts off on August 12th of 2003. So Juan and his girlfriend, Alma, sounds like they had been on and off again.
Yes.
He had given her a call and wanted her to stay the night. It sounds like he was very persistent.
I loved that.
In fact, he even stated he was persistent about it.
And who's calling someone at midnight? Unless you have one thing on your mind.
We know what they're doing.
We knew what he wanted because he was, quote unquote, very persistent.
And we know that she finally gave in.
Yes.
And went over there. Because let's be honest, who doesn't want to call at midnight somebody begging you to come over?
Yes. Yes.
I don't know. Sounds like a fun time to me. So anyway, Alma comes over. She stays the night. Juan talks about his dreams that night. And while it's not totally part of the story, I thought it was interesting. Because he claims that he dreamt that he had been abducted by a UFO. And in his dream, he said he was very scared.
That's so crazy and weird.
Just, I mean, can you imagine having that feeling of being taken away from your home and your life?
No.
Yeah.
No. And then it literally happens the next day.
Foreshadowing.
So weird.
So weird.
So weird.
Yeah. So she spends the night. They get through the night. The next morning, so it must have been a weekday, from what I gather, because he had to work the next morning.
Yep.
So they drive into work. It's about 7:30 in the morning. It sounds like Juan works with his dad. It sounded to me or looked like an auto body shop of some sort, right?
Yeah, he looked like he was in a garage with like a grinder, like grinding metal or...
Yeah.
I'm not sure. It did look like an auto body shop to me or something to that effect, or maybe making tools or
something.
Yeah.
I mean, it was definitely a labor type job.
Yes.
Yeah. And so he shows up at the shop. It's about 7:30. What he says is they pull into the parking lot and he notices a vehicle pull up next to them, a truck. And he didn't really make eye contact with the guy. But as he got out of his vehicle, all of a sudden there's a gun on him and he is being forced to the ground and surrounded by police officers.
And his poor dad.
And his dad is watching.
His poor dad looks out the window and... To what it sounded like from Juan, he couldn't even talk. He couldn't even say anything because he was probably completely disappointed or thought that something had happened.
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, especially if he already had his older son having issues.
Already a criminal and, you know. Oh, my gosh. And you could tell the tears welling up in Juan's eyes. I mean, he knew that that was just devastating and such a blow to his dad.
Oh, yeah.
And because he didn't know what to expect, you know, like obviously he thought probably Juan did something.
Absolutely. I'm sure he looked at his dad and saw heartbreak on his face.
Yep.
That's the only thing that I could gather watching that, you know, watching him well up and talk about it.
Breaks my heart.
I know, because it was obviously such a moment for him because it was burned into his memory.
Yep.
Like, he's not walking away from that.
Right.
So this all happens. He's being arrested. He doesn't know why. Alma doesn't know why.
Yep.
Right? He's just being arrested.
Yep.
He did nothing.
Well, and then, because I think he went to, they took him in and basically told him that he was there for the murder of Martha Puebla.
Yeah.
And he's like, what?
Yeah. Didn't even know.
Had no clue. And the prosecution basically stated that she had testified against Juan's brother in a separate case. And that was the reason for the murder. Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, they knew Juan had been in the courtroom during that hearing for his brother. But literally, she said nothing. Yeah. She didn't point his brother out. She didn't rat him out. Nothing. So why would he ever have ill will for her? Like, I could see maybe if she had.
Yeah.
But she didn't.
No.
She literally didn't. So it didn't make any sense that that was the reason or his motive. That wasn't a motive.
And she was a child. She was only 16.
Oh my gosh, 16. And I feel for her family. I can't even imagine. I mean, she shot in the face.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Outside of her home.
Literally, oh, right. It's the stuff of nightmares, I tell you.
It totally is. Because this all, so to back up a little bit, Martha Puebla was a 16-year-old girl on the night of May 12th, 2003. Earlier that week, actually, she had testified in that case against Mario, and he had been arrested for murder. So they were looking at her as a witness. She claimed she didn't see anything. This all happened on May 1st of 2003. So yep. She didn't see anything.
Yep.
2 weeks later, she's shot.
Crazy. And we see a taped interview of Juan and Detective Martin Pinner of the LAPD. And he automatically tells him he's a murderer. Like, just cocky, you know, he knows best. And he basically said, you know, convince us otherwise.
Oh, yeah.
That it's not you.
He already had his conclusions drawn.
Oh, he knew. I mean, That's in his mind. It was no one else but Juan. He And I don't even know if they would have went any further in investigating it, because in their mind, that was the murderer. Oh, it was Juan, no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. And that can't be how it is. I mean, yeah, he might look like the person that was drawn in the sketch, but...
Oh, talk about this. Talk about it. Oh. Why? Why does he look like this person?
Oh, my gosh.
Give us the details, Kenzie.
I will give you the details. So, in the courtroom, we get Detective Pinner. 911 call was at 10:43 p.m. We see a sketch of the suspect. So, they have it on screen, the sketch of him. Male Hispanic, short black hair, 5'7" to 5'11", 19 to 25 years old, stocky build, medium mustache. If you think about it, that is a really vague description. That could be many male Hispanics.
Because not almost all of them.
Literally. And that's why, that was the reason he was taken in, is because he had the same look general as the sketch. I just couldn't. It blows my mind. Really blows my mind.
Yeah.
But then we also get Todd Melnick, the defense attorney for Juan, whom I love.
My new hero.
Literally love Todd.
If I was a teenager, I'd have a poster of him in my room right now.
Total badass. I mean, you can tell he goes above and beyond. Totally does.
Yes.
And he cares about it. And I had to Google him, of course, side Google him and look him up. And you know, he has all the praises. He does a lot of news type shows.
Yep.
But he was even, I looked back a little bit further, and he actually appeared on KABC, which is the LA version of ABC, network down there. Yep. And he was the main legal expert on the O.J. Simpson case.
Oh, what?
Back when that happened, yeah.
Okay, so he's no schlub.
Yes.
Like, he knows his shit.
Yes, and he has been on, like, he was just the know-everything legal guy in LA. All the news stations went to him for everything, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But just to know that Juan had him on his side was so awesome. And I just literally loved him from the first second I saw him.
Same. As soon as I saw his face, I was like, yep, he's someone I trust.
Yep.
I'd get into a dark van with him.
I trust him.
Yeah. I'd take candy from him. No big deal. We then go into, you know, what actually happened on that day.
Yeah, and right? Juan's recollection of that day. Yep.
So Juan starts talking now in this documentary about what happened. So he couldn't remember, right? He didn't know exactly what had happened on May 12th. So Alma and him are talking, and Alma says, Juan, that was around Mother's Day. Didn't you get tickets to a Dodgers game on Mother's Day? And he was like, yeah, I did. So he goes into the story. It's almost kind of cute, but almost kind of one of those things that as a parent, you want to smack him, where he went and went and bought some tickets to a Dodgers game for his mother as a Mother's Day gift. He tried to pass off as, knowing full well she wouldn't go.
Right.
But then he got his game.
Right. Because
it sounds like he was a huge Dodgers fan. At one point, they even show a little picture of him as a child in a cute little like Dodgers, you know, uniform for Little League.
I know. It's so cute.
So he obviously was a huge baseball fan.
Yep.
And it sounds like the Dodgers was his team. So he buys these tickets. Now he needs to figure out who to go with, because it sounds like it was kind of last minute, like within a couple of days of the game. So he decides to take a couple of people. He brings his 6-year-old daughter. He brings his cousin Miguel. And then he brings his friend Ruben. And he goes about this story about the game. And as you're watching this, you can see how much passion this boy has for baseball.
Well, just how much he remembers.
He remembered every play.
Insane. Like, how they ran, who got to first base, what kind of out it was. I mean, I'm definitely no expert on baseball.
Oh, please.
Not at all.
No.
But, I mean, the things he can remember, I mean, you can just tell that he's passionate about it because he literally remembers every single thing from that game and what happened and how it was a back and forth game the whole game.
It sounded like it was a heated one.
Yeah, and they went into the ninth at a tie. So literally that game was lasting, you know, the whole entire night.
Yeah, it was crazy. It sounded like it was, it tied? So it even went into, did it go into overtime? I didn't even understand that part. But
I remember, well, I remember that they said it was a tie at the top of the ninth.
Yes.
And I don't think it went into overtime, but I think it was.
Do they even call it overtime? I think they, I don't even know.
I don't.
They call it.
I don't think they do. I think it's just extra innings or something. I don't know.
Yeah, this is why we are not sports casters.
No. Yeah, we're not.
Whoa.
We don't do a sports podcast at all.
Not even close. No. I could fake it like the best of them, but that's about it. So basically, knowing that this is where he was on that day, they are trying to come up with a defense and come up with his alibi. And so they're looking for eyewitnesses. They're looking for police reports. They're looking for anything they can find to place him at the game. And luckily, you know, there's a couple of things that happen. Well, for one, and it sounds like, but they didn't exactly state this, did it sound like his daughter was actually Alma's daughter? I think they were the parents.
It could be, yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Because she was there with her daughter when her daughter had to testify.
Yes.
She brought her up there, so I'm sure.
Yes. Yeah. And at the game, when the game is ending, he calls Alma and says, hey, we're at the game. The game's ending. We're going to do this. And she's wondering what time they're going to be home.
Yep.
So I assume, you know.
It's probably because she's wondering where her daughter is. Yeah. Totally makes sense.
So during this time, a couple of, at least a mile, if not a couple of miles away, Martha Puebla, our 16-year-old victim, was at home. She went outside. It's about 10 p.m., so it's dark.
Yep.
Even in the summer at this point, it would be dark. So she goes outside, and she's talking with some friends. And what one of the eyewitnesses says is that they remember a Chevy Malibu driving around the block several times, enough to where it was noticeable.
Oh, my God. Girl, get in your house.
Right.
Get in your house. I mean, if you see that happening, don't stay outside.
No.
Just don't. It's not good news. The
first word that came to my head was stalker.
Literally. Especially if they're going slow and they're in a residential area and they keep circling your house.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Yeah. Scare the
shit out of me. Time to go inside. Call the police. Be safe.
Absolutely. Get inside. Find a basement door.
Yes.
Like,
lock yourself in there.
Lock it. Get away from windows.
It's so sad.
Yeah. So this car drives around a few times. Then it finally stops in front of her house. The driver comes up to Martha, and Martha tells the driver, you remember me, it's Martha, as if she's saying, like, we've met before.
Right.
And the driver said, no, you don't, pulls out a gun and shoots her point blank in the face.
And the only eyewitness drops his cell phone and runs.
But, I mean, can you blame him?
Which I totally would, too.
Yeah.
But he was also the one that did the sketch for the police.
Yeah.
So it's like, something like that is so traumatizing. I'm sure you're not remembering details very well.
Gosh.
I literally think you probably black out a little bit.
Okay, and let's be honest. It sounds like this eyewitness was a guy. No offense, guys, but you're not the best when it comes to being observant about details.
Right.
I mean,
it was a guy. It definitely was a guy.
When was the last time a guy complimented you on your fresh manicure? Right?
No.
It doesn't happen.
No. Even when your hair is done, when you haven't gotten your hair done all quarantine,
you don't get a response. In a year and a half. And he still wouldn't notice.
No.
So let's be honest. This eyewitnesses are great, but I truly think that when it comes down to sketch artist,
right,
it can't be the holy grail of evidence you're going to place against somebody.
Well, and you have to take into consideration the surroundings too, okay? It's 100%. Nighttime.
Yep.
It's 10:30 at night or later.
Yeah.
It's dark out.
Yeah.
I mean, even if the sun was out until 9:30, it's dark by that time. The sun's down. There's probably street lights, but these people are driving around, comes out, literally, I'm pretty sure you go into some weird state and you kind of black out because you're terrified for your own life.
Absolutely. I mean, you see a gun?
Yeah. If this guy's going to shoot this girl, why wouldn't he shoot me? He doesn't even know me. He knows her. You don't know what these people are thinking or what they're going to do next. So you have to take so many things into consideration when it comes to a sketch artist. Like, if it would have been daylight, might have been different. I mean, if he could have had a really good long look at this person, totally could have been different. And I'm pretty sure that this driver, literally, it happened probably so quick. Mm-hmm. And he probably ran back in his car and drove away. Like, obviously, he's not staying there. So it's, like, so quick to happen that, I don't know, I think it was just rush to judgment on so many different things.
100%.
Well, of course. And then in comes Deputy District Attorney, Beth Silverman.
You mean?
My God.
Beth Bitch Silverman?
Yep. The sniper.
Oh.
God.
A nickname Don't she was even. Given for her abilities in the courtroom.
Well, no, because what they said is she is the district attorney that only goes for the death penalty. It's like,
I think we
could go into that all day long, but it's like, really? That's the only thing that you're going for? I'm like, yes, I believe that people need to be in prison. Do I believe in the death penalty? I'm not really sure.
It's debatable.
It's totally debatable. It is one of those things. But it's like, if that's the only thing you're going for, come on, lady. I think she's just on her high horse and she knows that she has the power to do this kind of stuff. And I think that's why she's doing it. Yeah. And that makes her trash.
Well, it sounded like she was fairly successful in previous cases, right?
Oh, for sure.
So it's not like she's just somebody.
No, because they say that she won every single death penalty case that she had.
Yeah.
And I'm like, holy shit, if I was Juan, I would be literally
terrified.
Oh my God, I'd be probably shitting my pants. Let's be real.
Literally.
Be terrified. Because if you don't have your alibi 100% down and know exactly where you are going to the prison for the rest of your life and dying there.
Yeah.
And going to be sitting on death row.
Yep.
And then we realize that he was actually sent to maximum security prison. I can't imagine that. I mean, I get that he was under suspicion for murder, but maximum security?
I know.
I mean, when he hasn't even went to court or anything like that?
Hasn't even actually been convicted yet.
Oh my gosh, you could tell in his eyes when he was telling us that that's where he went. He was absolutely terrified.
Oh, can you imagine?
No, I can't. No. It's so scary and hanging around gang incredibly sad.
Is one thing, but that, to be surrounded, scary.
Seriously. Well, and then they talk about Dodger Vision. So I guess at the Dodger Stadium, they have what they call Dodger Vision, which is a ton of different cameras that kind of pan, you know, the whole stadium, show different rows, you know, obviously shows the game as well.
Yeah.
But that was where his defense attorney started watching film to see if he could find him. Oh my gosh, I literally could not imagine having to go through all of that information. Oh.
That's so much.
Oh my gosh. I mean, that would take so much time, but he was dedicated. I mean, this defense attorney, he knew his shit. He knew what he had to do to win.
Yeah.
Especially against this, you know, DA. She was no shit. She was, you know, going for it.
Yep. It. Concrete.
Yep, absolutely. Oh, and then Dodger Vision. They said that they found him, but their resolution wasn't high enough. Okay. I get that it's 2003 and the cameras weren't probably great, but what is the point of cameras? They say this on all those, like, you know, cameras that are in the gas stations. It's like, it's not high resolution. We can't figure out who it is.
Yeah.
What is the point? Why have the cameras?
Yeah. Why do we have
There is no point to having the cameras if you can't pinpoint or find out who it is.
Why is it that my phone can take 4K video?
I know.
But these cameras can't.
It's crazy. I mean, again, granted, it was 2003. I'll give them that.
Yeah.
The cameras probably weren't as great. I don't even know if iPhones were a thing.
They were not. I still had a brick phone.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Wasn't it 2006?
I think it was 2006 or 2007 was when iPhones came out.
I think so.
The first.
Yep. We might even still had razors back in 2003.
I had a Crazer, actually, in 2005. So, yes, we did. Yep. There was no such thing as an iPhone.
Oh, my gosh.
And if it was, people weren't using them.
My pink flip phone razor was my prized possession. I had all the dangly things that hung off the where the antenna should be.
Oh, I did.
I did all that.
Oh, see, and I went with the Crazer, which was the thinner, like, version of a razor, but the front of it was a mirror. Yeah. So I could literally pull my phone out at any time and I could use it as a compact and fix my lipstick or check my mascara.
Wow.
Yeah.
You were thinking dual action there to do two things.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything needs to multitask for me. I can't have that many things going on.
I would have never thought of that, to be honest. But I do remember those now. I was like, what the hell is a crazer? I don't even remember what that is.
Yeah.
Now I remember that it was the thinner version. That's right.
Yep. All right. So back to the story. We get to the actual courtroom. In the documentary, they're kind of going back and forth between the different courtroom times and then all of the witness statements, as well as what the attorney, Todd Melnick, is doing behind the scenes.
Right.
To try to come up with his case.
Yep.
So when it comes to testifying, the first person that they talk about bringing in is Juan's daughter, and she's six. I mean, she was one of the people at the game with him.
My daughter is 6 years old. That is so scary for her.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and they immediately start asking her if she knows what a lie is. And that, to me, I'm like, okay, I'm sure she knows what a lie is. But they want to make sure
they have to
that
prove
she's
it.
Well aware
yep.
that we don't lie. And, you know, asking her questions like, if I told you that this pen is black, would you say that's a truth or a lie? And she's like, a lie. And so she did very well. But I think it was Alma that was up with her in the stand. So, yeah. And she didn't even sit down. She stood the whole time. And oh my God.
She was so cute.
It was heart-wrenching. And to see Juan too was very heart-wrenching.
It really was. Because in this interview, they're asking her, where did you go? Did your dad take you to a game? And she said, yes. And he says, you know, did he buy you anything at the game? And she goes, yes, he bought me ice cream and candy and Dodgers cards, which ends up being a thing that helps with his alibi later on.
Right. Because that was something that he went and purchased at the end of the game. So that gave him more time at Dodger Stadium.
Right. He didn't just leave right after the game.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But then we're back to Beth Silverman, right? Sniper Beth Silverman. Yeah. Eye roll, huge eye roll. Interviewer asks why Juan didn't mention the Dodger game when he was in his first interview with police.
Right, the first one, the day that he was arrested.
First interview that he literally didn't even realize he was going to be getting, you know, pushed to the ground with a gun in his face.
Yep.
It's like, how about it's been 3 months since this murder happened?
Yeah.
And he's clearly caught off guard. So it's like, why would he think that, oh, I went to a Dodger game? And he even stated that he had went to multiple Dodger games.
Yeah, didn't he say he'd been to like hundreds over his lifetime?
He'd been to so many Dodger games and he wouldn't have remembered that. He probably wouldn't even have remembered it was Mother's Day weekend or near Mother's Day weekend.
Right.
It was just in May. Like, it's not something that you just remember, oh, we went to a game that day, you know?
Yeah.
So I just
say
hated
he hadn't
that.
Gone to five more since then.
I hated that question.
I know,
to Beth. I'm like, that's not a real question to be asking, because think about it. If you were in that position, would you remember that? Like,
no.
Give me a break. 3 months ago, I won't remember a damn thing.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I mean
think about even if you get into like a little argument with somebody and you walk away from it and 10 hours later, you're like, shit. Why didn't I say this?
Yes.
I knew that.
Oh my gosh.
It didn't come to my head at that time.
I do that with conversations I had with people years ago.
All the
time. I'm like, damn it, I should have said this. This would have sounded so much cooler.
Yeah, this makes perfect sense.
My point would have been made a lot quicker.
Oh, it's just so dumb. So the defense attorney is talking with Juan about remembering anything else about that day, about the game. You know, was there anything that stood out? Because, I mean, if you think about it, these games are highly populated. I think they said there was over 27,000 people there that day. You know, a lot of times they'll have different little events going on inside of the game, you know, that aren't an everyday thing.
Right. And not necessarily aimed at the game either.
Right. Every once in a while they'll have like a salute, you know, to some maybe like military or something like that. So they get there and he's talking about remembering a film crew. So he remembers at the game, a film crew, not Dodger Vision, and we're not talking a film crew from the game itself,
right?
An outside film crew being at the game the section that he was sitting.
Oh my gosh!
So he tells this to his attorney, and his attorney is like, So he gives a call to the media relations. Actually, he speaks with one of the top guys for the Dodgers, calls him right away, and he's like, look,
Like the general counsel or something, right?
Oh, gosh. He was like a senior VP or something. Yeah. Big guy. And he is saying to him, like, you know, we need to speak with your media relations. Can we look in like a calendar log? Do you have something in your records that show what could have been going on during that game at that time? And they pull out a calendar book.
A real thick calendar book.
Like we're talking a book, yes. People.
Going through page and yes. page and page.
Like a giant planner for your year.
Yep.
And they said they're looking through these pages and Todd is laughing mm-hmm. because they're blank. There's nothing going on, right? They're going through all these pages and then all of a sudden they come across that day, May 12th. There's an entry on there and it says HBO's Curb Your Enthusiasm. And he's thinking, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Right? So they find out that Larry David, eye roll, because just Google it.
Why?
He's weird.
So weird. Okay. Let's talk about his talking head for a second, because he comes in right off the bat and he's like, what song is this?
Yeah. Starts whistling.
Just whistling. It's like, you're in an interview. Someone's asking you questions, and he's just so off the wall.
I didn't know who he was. So then...
I didn't either. I had to Google him.
After the, like, whistling part, I'm thinking, who is this goofball, and why is he on here? Like, why did he make the cut for being in this documentary? Well, it turns out he's actually the creator of Seinfeld.
Yes.
Which now, in hindsight, completely makes me understand why he is the way he is.
Yeah. He had said something to the effect of, oh, he had mentioned that I was this big mega star. And, oh, yeah, he's right. It's like, ugh, I don't know if he was trying to make a joke, but it just seemed cringy to me. I didn't like how he stated that. I'm like,
because obviously neither one of us knew who the fuck he was.
Literally. And his attorney didn't either.
Didn't even know who he was either.
He literally had no idea until he had to look him up and figure out he actually was someone who had done a lot in Hollywood, a lot of shows. It's obviously hilarious. Curb Your Enthusiasm was on for quite a while as well.
I never watched it, but as soon as I heard the name of it, I was like, oh yeah, I remember hearing that.
Yes.
To be honest, I thought it was like a home makeover show. Because does that make more sense?
Yeah, that would totally make more sense. Reveal.
That's what I thought it was about.
Yes.
They happened to be at Dodger Stadium on May 12th filming this episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, and they ended up calling it The Carpool Lane. It's an episode about him, Larry David, who is the main character in this show, picking up a hooker who is played by Kim Whitley, who I think is hilarious.
She's
because
so
I
funny.
Love her.
Yes.
Picking up this hooker in the carpool lane. She's trying to get him, you know, to pay her some money to, you know what hookers do, they hook.
That's right.
And he decides he's going to take her to a Dodgers game. Could this have been taken as real life inspiration?
Yes.
Maybe. Who does
this? I would not put it against him, to be completely honest. No. I would not put it against Larry.
No. So they decide they're going to film this show at Dodger Stadium. They also decide that they're going to do it at a live game instead of stalking the stands with extras. They're just going to do it live.
Well, and I think I remember that general counsel guy, which I'm totally blanking on his name now. He had stated that they do like to do things with film workers and like the film industry. They like to be a part of that and help when they can, because obviously there's a lot of shows that are done out of LA. Dodgers are a huge baseball team. So he did mention something like that to that effect.
Oh, his name was Sam Fernandez, by the way.
Fernandez.
Yeah, he was like the senior VP for the Dodgers.
Okay,
Sam
there Fernandez. We go. There,
I knew I wrote it down, but I could not.
I don't know why I thought he was a general counsel, but yes.
I mean,
yes.
Maybe that was part of it. He had a long name. There was a very long title of things after his name. Let's just say the big man at Dodger Stadium, Sam Fernandez.
And I think we saw a few people actually from Dodgers that were like higher up people.
Yeah.
Doing their little talking heads about this whole episode. So that was
credible enough, right?
Right.
The resolution wasn't big enough.
Yep.
They decided to reach out to the show and say, look, if you were filming that day, can we look through your films? Now, generally, this is like a huge no-no. No show is going to hand over their unedited, you know, film.
Unseen film that's
before
going...
Before it's even been
right,
live.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's just not a thing that happens. But they decide they're going to let him do it because of the circumstances. They're trying to get a man off death row. So they're looking through tons of beta tapes. I think they said each beta tape only had about 6 minutes of film on it. So they had to look through so many of them to try to figure out where he was. See if they could catch Juan, his daughter, you know, his cousin, his friend, if they could try to place them in this spot. What are the fucking chances that they're filming in the exact same section and that they find him on several tapes?
It blows my mind.
Yeah. The first one being timestamped at 8:55 p.m. The last one being timestamped at 9:15. The fact that it was timestamped, amazing.
Well, and I think all of, like, big Hollywood execs and stuff, I think all their film is timestamped. But obviously this is super helpful to have it be timestamped in this scenario. And I just can't believe it. They could have been in any section.
Any
section in this whole humongous stadium. And they just so happened to literally be seats away from them.
Oh, yeah. It was insane how close they were.
Oh, my gosh.
It's crazy. I got goosebumps when I saw him walking up and down the stands.
I'm getting goosebumps right now as we talk about it. It's freaking me out.
Ugh.
But the prosecution says that the tapes are good for nothing. The murder happened after 10:30. We want to say that it was around 10:32 or 10:52 is when the murder actually happened.
Somewhere around there, yeah.
But it was after 10:30. So they said that he had ample amount of time to get the murder done.
Which is valid.
Right. And they also said that he had to drop his cousin off 100 to 150 yards where the murder had happened. And that he left early to commit the murder. Didn't he have his daughter with? Did he drop her off first? Was she with him when this happened? None of that made sense to me. Well, because he still has his daughter.
Yeah.
Even if he had to drop his cousin off, he still has his daughter. And, like, that has to take 15 to 20 minutes, right? I mean, you would think that that would take that amount of time.
Well, think about even, okay, first of all, we're in L.A. No one has ever talked about traffic being an easy thing in L.A.
No.
And
no.
I can't imagine that getting out of a huge stadium area like that either is easy.
No.
So there's time that is going to be taken.
Well, and remember, this game was tied back and forth all the way to the ninth.
Who would leave early?
Right. No one's going to leave early. Especially everyone's leaving at the same time. Fan. It has to probably take 15 to 20 minutes even to get out of the parking lot. Oh, I mean, if you think about it, it's probably insane. Like, it always is at any venue, at any sporting event. It sucks getting out because everyone's trying to get out the same exit.
Yes. So I don't know about you, but what I will do is one of two things. If the game sucks really bad, I will leave early.
Oh, for sure.
If it's not sucking and it's really good, I'm going to lag around afterwards. I'm going to take some time.
Yeah.
Like, let the crowd leave so that I can leave a little bit easier.
Because it's frustrating. It's frustrating to be in traffic with people. But then they mentioned that they did the phone pinging. I would have thought that would have been something they would have done first. But honestly, in 2003, maybe it wasn't really a thing. And I remember the lady at the phone company said it was kind of a bit of a big deal to have to do it, to actually get all the information.
Yeah.
Where his phone would have pinged, there was like a mile radius outside the stadium. And his phone actually did ping there, stating that he was still at Dodger Stadium at 10:12.
Yeah.
Right?
Because he had made a call to Martha.
Exactly.
Yes. I'm sorry, not Martha. Alma, the girlfriend.
Alma, yes.
He had made a call to Alma to let her know that they were done with the game and that they would be leaving soon, so that I'm assuming she had a bit of an idea of what time to expect her daughter home.
Correct. And then we get the Judge Leslie Dunn talking head.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes. And she basically stated that she was befuddled. All the information that she was getting wasn't making sense. She couldn't remember whose numbers went to who and what time. All she knew was that the defendant was looking at a death sentence if convicted.
Well, can you imagine? It sounds like this, what was her name again? Silverman?
Beth Silverman, the sniper. Beth.
We don't like her. That's why I can't even remember her name, because it's not worth it.
It's not worth it.
It's not worth it. But it sounds like she was kind of reaching for straws as far as trying to come up with this thing. And
all she had was the eyewitness with his drawing that was so vague. That's all she had. Well, and thankfully it actually didn't go to trial, because it went obviously just to the judge, because she was deciding whether or not to actually bring it to trial. So thankfully it never did.
Yeah.
Which I obviously think helped him for sure.
Yeah, because there wasn't even any receipts that they could use, because he had paid cash at the stadium. So they couldn't timestamp a receipt to be like, oh yeah, he bought ice cream at this time.
Right.
Or these Dodger cards that he stopped for after the game for his daughter.
Right.
To waste a little bit of time. The only thing they had was that call to Alma at 10:10 p.m.
And saying that literally, they were about to leave. Nowadays, I mean, I always use a card.
Oh my gosh, every cash,
single,
what?
Every single place I go, I use a card. Unless I have to use cash for something, I don't. But back then, in 2003, it probably was pretty common to use cash places. Oh, yeah.
You know, you go to the bank. Thing, but not as much.
Right, right. And you go to the bank, take a couple $100 out.
Yeah.
You go to the game, like, you know what you have to spend. It's cash. And back then, that's probably what people use. It totally makes sense to me. But then we come back, and the judge ended up taking the tapes home with her, the interrogation tapes.
I because think she didn't want to sit there and listen to him at work.
Well, and I think, too, she was so confused by it, and she really needed to listen, is what she said.
She seemed really conflicted.
Yes, you know? Absolutely. Well, and I think because of the death penalty sentence, right. I think that had a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
Just thinking she might have taken it to trial because she knew that he wasn't going to die for this.
Yeah.
You know?
He wasn't taking a plea because he didn't do anything.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But then she says that she had to listen to it over and over and over. And then she says that she lets her kids listen to it. I'm like, lady, how old are your kids? Because they better be old enough to be listening to this kind of stuff. I mean, the interrogation tapes just seem very one-sided. They already know it's him.
It's very
rude, cocky, aggressive. I'm sure he was swearing too, which, you know,
well, we do that on this podcast too. If you are trying to defend yourself, someone's coming at you saying you did something you know you didn't do, there's going to be F-bombs dropping left and right if it were me.
Absolutely.
Because I'm going to get heated and passionate about the fact that I did not fucking do it.
Absolutely. And that you could totally tell in his interrogation tapes that he didn't. I mean, because he was passionate about, like, you got the wrong guy, man.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't do it. Like, this wasn't me. And then what happens next?
Oh my gosh. So they come back and they're listening to the judge after both sides have given their sides, right?
Yep, their statements,
Yeah, all of the witnesses have testified. They have all the information that they can get at this point. So Judge Leslie Dunn starts talking, and she's giving her final thoughts. And Juan says she's talking and talking and talking. He can't understand a word she's saying, because his life is literally flashing before his eyes.
Yep.
He doesn't understand what the fuck is happening. He hasn't gone to law school. He doesn't know half the words that they're using. I mean, who does, right?
I wouldn't either.
I don't, and I still watch all this shit.
Yep.
Yeah, I just like figure out at the end, was he guilty or not?
Yes.
Okay, there we go.
Well, you listen to the sides, right? You listen to the evidence, because that's what it should be based on. It should solely be based on the evidence of what evidence is actually presented.
100%.
And what is concrete. What is true and tried
not coincidental.
Yes.
Or has a shadow of a doubt to
it. Yes.
If there is any doubt, that should be thrown out.
Yes.
Or proven.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So she's talking, and he says, at some point, Todd, his attorney, leans over and whispers in his ear, "It's done." And immediately...
Goosebumps.
Goosebumps. Yes. And he was like... What? And if that would have been me, I'd been like, holy fuck, it's done and I'm going to jail. I would have been freaking out. Like, I'd be like, what do you mean? You need to clarify this. What do you mean it's done? It's done. What's done?
Yeah.
What's happening here? She threw it out. She did not convict him.
They didn't specify what it was. So we don't know if it was dismissed, if it was thrown out, if he was not guilty. Like, we didn't really know if it was an actual, like, trial or if it was, like, the preliminary hearing to decide if there's enough evidence to bring it to trial. Can you imagine being him? I mean,
he was
just in jail. They didn't mention how long he'd been in jail for, because they didn't really say how long this sentencing happened and the preliminary stuff happened, but
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say it wasn't a couple of days. I bet it was longer.
Well, and she said that she had to keep going back, sending him back because she didn't know what to do, which is a little unfair if you're asking me, like, on the defendant, the person that's there to claim their innocence, right?
Yep.
Now he has to sit in jail for longer, and you know the court system in the United States is slow.
Oh my gosh.
Everything is so backed
up. It's a hurry up and wait situation.
It is. And unfortunately, I mean, with murder cases, I'm sure it's a little bit higher priority to get those cases in because they want to make sure that they can either convict or
get
acquit
them off the streets,
or,
if nothing else.
Right. Well, and then, you know, we find out that defective,
Well, this whole case was defective.
Right? This whole case was defective. Well, no, Detective Juan Rodriguez said that he had been asking Juan incriminating questions to get incriminating responses.
Yeah.
So just all around bad interrogation and dishonesty with their crew at the LAPD. And they both ended up getting off of the homicide division.
Isn't that hilarious?
Well, they still work there, but they are working in separate areas. They weren't working together anymore. They were taken off the homicide because of this case, which they should have been. Yeah. What they were doing, some of the things they were saying, I still can't get over it. Like, you thought you were cool. What is that? Yeah. I can't
When did they teach that in interrogation class?
Literally. I can't get it. It doesn't make sense to me.
No.
But we did see some on-screen text.
Yes, yes. So at the very end, they kind of do give you like an overview of what happens. Like
afterwards.
What happened after.
Yeah.
So they say that Juan Catalan actually received a settlement in a lawsuit against the city of LA and their police force in the amount of $320,000. I don't know how they came up with that number. They right. don't go into detail, but fuck yeah.
Absolutely.
Take
he deserves it.
All they're worth.
100%.
Oh, man. Basically, there was just such awful interrogation, dishonesty happening. Martin Pinner and Juan mm-hmm. Rodriguez, both of the detectives,
yep.
were both removed from homicide, like yep. you said. Different departments. One of them was actually downgraded to auto fraud detail, which, damn. I mean, I think that's like probably one step above like parking meter, right?
Right. Yeah, definitely.
Like, eek. and then they also cut to what they did find out later on. So the FBI, and they don't go into detail, we should probably have Googled this, but the FBI discovered that it was four other men that were part of a gang.
Yeah.
Were responsible for the murder of Martha Puebla, and they ended up taking deals for life in prison sentences, even though Juan had been up for death penalty. So
it drives me insane.
Yeah.
I can't wrap my head around it. I get it that they took a deal, and I'm sure they were probably up for death penalty too.
Yep.
But still, for the fact that Juan was completely innocent and he was up for his life and he didn't do it.
It's crazy.
And they had to work their asses off to prove him innocent. And if the what ifs, that's what gets me every single time. And at the end of the documentary, they talk about that. What if he didn't get the seats that he had? What if he didn't sit in that aisle? What if they didn't have the film crew that day because of whatever circumstance happened, yeah. right? What if that PA guy didn't let him walk in the film to go down and let him and his daughter sit? What if he didn't let him do that?
Yeah.
You know,
they
because
they wouldn't have had any of that.
They wouldn't have had that film footage then to actually timestamp him there. Oh my gosh. This is the type of stuff that gives me chills. I can't even believe it. I'm so glad that it ended up being this way for him.
I was like, I don't even bite my nails, but that's what I would have
it's
been
a nail
doing.
Biter.
Yes. I was like, oh,
I told you
it'd
be a good one.
It was a good one.
Oh, it was so great. This was so fun. I can't even believe we got through our first episode.
We totally did.
Oh my gosh.
So,
this is so awesome.
They talk about the stuff at the end of the video, but then there was a part that really kind of rubbed you
off.
Oh
my gosh. How did I forget?
Oh, because you want to forget it, but it's like a train wreck. You can't.
We see Larry David again.
Yep.
On the screen. Like, why is he there again? Yeah. No one needs to see him. He really isn't that big of a part of this whole
no,
thing.
No, he didn't really add much to it.
No, why can't we see Todd again? Totally pumped to see Todd again.
Totally.
But we see Larry David, and he's basically talking about how he has to impress these people with his story. Or sometimes he'll impress his friends with the time he got a guy out of wrongful conviction. It's like,
yeah,
get off your high horse. Row. You're done for the night. Goodbye.
Right. I was.
It was weird. It was so weird. But anyway, we're happy. He was innocent.
Yes.
He got to go home. Oh, that reunion was so awesome to see.
Hugged his daughter. I was like, I'm dying.
Oh my gosh. I mean,
and do you remember
I
what he said he was the most excited about when he got out?
A Coke.
A Coke. My first question, are we talking bottle? Are we talking can? Or are we talking the infamous McDonald's fountain Coke?
It has to be McDonald's.
It has to be.
That
there is nothing
that shit is out of
Coke.
This world.
Seriously,
it has to be the McDonald's Coke.
It's McDonald's Coke. Ugh. But yeah, so that's it.
That's long
that's
shot.
The story.
That's long shot.
That's long shot. It's on Netflix.
Check it out. We all, yeah. Netflix and chill tonight.
Yes.
Do it. I guarantee you, you will still be shocked watching this. And it's a nice great
one too.
Yes.
I liked
yes.
that. It was what, 40 minutes, I think, for the yep. whole thing?
Yeah, 40 to 50 minutes. Nice and short. Hopefully yeah. you'll be able to stay awake for it. I know sometimes I end up falling asleep to the longer documentaries, but
100%.
It's great. We're so glad and thankful that you guys tuned in today for our first episode of Sheer Crime.
Yay!
We're so one. Exciting. And rate and review us on iTunes.
Oh my gosh, review,
that
review,
always
review.
Helps us with our ratings, and hopefully we'll get more viewers. Please send us your requests. Yes. Any requests that you guys have, we would love to hear about them, and we'd love to cover the stories for you.
Especially if it's an obscure documentary out there that
absolutely.
We haven't maybe heard of.
Those are my favorite. The ones that are not really well known.
Yeah, it's not
those
a John Benet Ramsey.
Yes.
It's not a Ted Bundy. It's that other guy.
Yes.
Never heard of.
Yes. And it's usually a little bit freakier too, because you still haven't heard about him. So yes, send those in. We'd love to do them for you guys. We're very excited to start this new journey together with Sheer Crime Podcast. Oh. But thanks so much, guys. We had fun.
We had so much fun, and we will be back next week.
Cheers.
Cheers.